Well, it's lovely to be with you this morning. It's lovely to look around and see familiar faces. It's one of the things about going to preach in different places. You think, oh yeah, I remember Highgrove, the days when, or at Muller's with you, Margaret, and or most recently Community Church from Sarah. And actually, I think, oh, there's people here that we're friends together. And that's one thing I love about Bristol, is that there's a real passion to see how do we change our city, how do we change our communities with the power and love of God. And God's put Christians all around the place in different churches. And again, I get the chance from time to time just to come and see what God's doing. So it's lovely to be here with you and hear what God's doing through Alma. And Simon contacted me kind of a little while ago and said, would I come and speak? A little series on disciplines, gave me a little choice of topics. I looked down at that and I thought, oh, being silent. Fancy doing a talk on being silent. Kind of, do you do it with kind of charades or something? Kind of, the discipline of silence. But I looked at the fasting one. Actually, and fasting is something that I have been doing a little bit of thinking about. So, kind of I think to Simon's relief, I said that I would do the one on fasting. So, and I'm not quite sure what you think about when you saw that it was about fasting, or when that slide came up and you suddenly thought, fasting. I'm not quite sure how you react to that, because in this series looking at spiritual disciplines, some of them kind of at a push you can maybe have a little go at, but the idea of going without food, how are we going to manage that? How many of you have ever had a go at fasting? Okay. How many of you have really enjoyed fasting? Okay. I mean, it's a tricky thing, isn't it? How there's, the Bible talks, and Jesus talks about fasting and says it's something that kind of we should be kind of doing. And yet we think, oh, that just seems like a bit hardcore. It seems a little bit too kind of too much. And I suppose when you look at the series on spiritual disciplines, maybe you think, well, but Tim, it's supposed to be like that. It's kind of, it's spiritual disciplines. It's yee-haw. We're going to go and kind of be hardcore Christians and we're going to put ourselves through it and come out at the end kind of better, stronger people. And I do love the idea of spiritual disciplines. I do think that they're ways in which God helps us to encounter him. But I in reading, I don't know if you ever read much of John Wesley, but when John Wesley talks about spiritual disciplines, he calls them means of grace. I'm not sure if he, maybe other people mentioned that as well. He says that spiritual disciplines, rather than necessarily being just a kind of a, if you're slightly kind of hardcore, if you're slightly kind of somehow hyper-spiritual, these spiritual disciplines, a bit like army training and getting up early in the morning and Olympic rowers out there on the lake at 5:30 before the sun's even risen, and you kind of get this idea of spiritual disciplines. And he says that his perception of these, what we call spiritual disciplines or habits, he says they're actually means of God's grace. That there's a God who loves us. There's a God who has hope and joy and peace. There's a God who wants to bring light into darkness. Not that we can earn any of those things, but he's got this grace that can be available to us. That, not that we can earn it, but somehow we have to be open to that grace. And he would say that these spiritual disciplines are a bit like means of grace. Now, I'm not sure if you've ever been walking in some distant mountains or distant hills and come across a reservoir. But a reservoir quite often is hidden away. There might be just a little single track going up to it. It's not kind of in the business of life. You don't often come across a reservoir. But in some ways, this gives me a picture of what God is like. That there is an unseen reservoir hidden away of God's riches, God's grace, God's kindness and compassion. And it's not visible to our everyday eye, but it's just as real and just as true as that reservoir is. But that reservoir and all the water that's stored there will only do a household, a community, a town, a city any good if there's pipework that takes the water to the place of need. And if you look at the bottom there, you'll see there's this pipe coming out of the bottom of the reservoir. And that pipe maybe goes for hundreds of miles, unseen. But it's a means by which that water gets to your tap, your bath, your shower, your hose pipe, whatever it is that you... And in some ways, Wesley says that the spiritual disciplines we engage in, that their means, it's like the pipework that accesses all that we have of heaven and accesses that grace into our lives. And because quite often life can be busy and life can be full, we may not make the most or take advantage of God's grace in our life. All that Jesus died to win for us, that is truly there in the heavenly places, ours to access. And at times we don't access all that Jesus won for us. And that's why these spiritual disciplines are means by which we can access that grace. The solitude, the silence, the prayer, the Bible reading. These ways are ways, they're not just kind of for the super king Christians, they are the very ways by which we can access God's free grace into our life. And that's why I think when we look at the about fasting, fasting is something that, Jesus says, doesn't he, that it has reward. So I don't know if you know in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus talks about giving, about praying, but then he comes on to talk about fasting. And he says, when you fast, again, it's not for his disciples, if you happen to be those kinds of Christians that fast, here's a few things. But he was just saying, actually, guys, when you fast, fasting is something that is for everybody who wants to follow Jesus. It's not something for the Eastern mystics and those that kind of somehow are slightly kind of Hindu, Buddhist kind of, oh, that's a bit weird. Actually, no, if you're following Jesus, he says that when you fast, don't look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their face to show others they are fasting. I tell you, they receive their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your face, on your head, and wash your face, so that it will be obvious, not be obvious to others that you're fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, like the unseen reservoir. And your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. There's a benefit to spiritual disciplines. There's the reward of heaven towards you. And so as we think about fasting for a bit this morning, I want you to think of fasting as a means of God's grace rather than a hardcore discipline if I happen to be feeling super spiritual. Is that okay? So it's a means by which we can access God's grace. Now, how does that work? Kind of, now, fasting is something that is practiced across many religions, but is practiced within Christianity. Fasting, by definition, is going without food. So when you normally eat food, you don't eat food. And what's going on there? I mean, people have different ideas about fasting. Some people think that fasting, it's a bit like in medieval times when there was asceticism. Do you know what asceticism is? It's this Greek idea that the spiritual is pure and good and true, and the physical is bad and rotten and evil. So our bodies are, in essence, evil. So we've got to kind of beat our bodies up. We've got to wear sackcloth. We're going to flagellate ourselves because this body is so evil and so rotten. And some people think, well, fasting's just kind of this body, you're so mean, you're so evil, I'm not going to give you any food today because it's a mean of kind of subduing this body. And I don't think fasting was intended to be asceticism. I don't think fasting was supposed to be a hunger strike. Do you know what hunger? So if you're in prison, you kind of and you've got a request, you want something to change, and you've got no other way of seeing the change happen that you'd want to change, then you go on a hunger strike. You stop eating your food because you want to get your request done. And some people, I think, regard fasting like that. That I've prayed for a bit, I've prayed a bit more, God's not answering me, so okay, God, I'm getting really serious now, I'm going to pray and fast. As if it's somehow, this will really persuade you, God, to answer my prayer, arm behind the back, you've got to answer me now, God. And actually, I don't think fasting is putting pressure on God. I don't think fasting is showing that you're super serious about that prayer. I don't think it's meant to be a manipulative way to make your prayer life somehow more effective. It's a means of grace in our lives. I don't know, did any of you try the kind of eat five, fast two kind of diet plan? This little kind of, I think, well, actually, no, fasting's not about controlling your weight and kind of, actually, fasting It's a spiritual discipline that helps us to access all that God has and to realize the limitations of our physical body. If you go through the Bible, you'll see that fasting was something that that was regularly practiced. I mean, that there was the kind of the normal fast. So a normal fast, as you read through the Bible, is not eating food. You can probably go without food, I think, medically for up to 40 days or so. And so classically, people would say that when we talk about fasting is normally you give up food. Give up one meal, give up food for one day, give up food for one week. That is fasting. But as you read through the Bible, you also see that there's an absolute fast. Now, an absolute fast is no food or drink. It's saying that I'm not going to have anything that's going to go in through my mouth into my body, neither food, solid nor liquid. And so in Esther and Acts chapter 9, you see there's fast that would be an absolute fast. Don't drink and don't eat. Now, for an absolute fast, I don't know, the medics amongst us could probably say, can you go sit 3 days without water before there's some serious damage done to your body? So you can't kind of, again, absolute fast. I think in some religions, again, sunrise to sunset, absolute fast. No food, no drink. And we do see that in the Bible. You then got what's kind of, you got a super fast. It's like a supernatural fast. It's a fast that actually medically should not happen. So it's no food or drink for an extended time. So 40 days would be, I mean, to go 40 days without food, you can manage. 40 days without water, you can't manage. It has to be supernatural. So Moses in Deuteronomy 9, or Elijah in 1 Kings 19, or some people think for Jesus in the wilderness as he's tempted by the devil, that was, again, a super fast, that he went without water as well as without without anything to eat. Now, I don't recommend a super fast. I think that is one of the things that is super, super, super unusual. So, again, medically, it's probably not very sensible to try going without water for more than three days. I suppose there's a partial fast. So when we talk about fasting, I think some people say to me, "Oh, Tim, be careful when you talk about fasting, because for some people, it's not an option. For some people, maybe there's a medical condition, maybe you have diabetes, and actually, the way that you need to control that is actually you need to eat regularly. So don't try fasting if there's a medical condition." Actually, don't try fasting if you're pregnant. I mean, there's certain things that you think, actually, it's just not helpful to fast. I know for some people, and maybe some people here, that in the past, food has been an issue around control and an eating disorder. And again, if there's been an issue where food has been a deal for you, and it's become something more than just feeding yourself, it has been about control and identity and self-image, again, I would just be slightly kind of pastorally kind of cautious. Okay, kind of be aware of that, and don't put yourself in it's a means of grace. And if fasting is going to make you vulnerable rather than receiving God's grace, again, just be cautious and just be aware. So it's not a kind of cop-out for everybody, but it is just, you do need to think. And does that mean that fasting's out altogether? Well, there are times in the Bible where there's partial fast. It's a fast where, rather than stopping food altogether, there's a restriction in the kind of diet that you might eat. And so in Daniel, in Daniel chapter 1 and chapter 10, we see Daniel went on a vegetarian kind of diet, just for a period of time. And again, part of that was to demonstrate something about the glory and the goodness of God to an unbelieving world. And I think there's times where you can go for a partial fast. You choose some things to abstain from. Again, particularly if you're operating heavy machinery, you're an aircraft pilot. Again, if you're fasting and your blood sugar level goes down and your concentration kind of, you probably oughtn't to be doing it, but you can go on a restricted diet. I know for myself, there's times where I do like sugar in my tea and coffee. I know it's old-fashioned, but I do. But there's times where I think, do you know what? I'm going to fast having sugar in my tea and coffee just to remind myself that actually I can live without sugar. It can be done. And each time I kind of drink a cup of tea or coffee without sugar, I go, oh, but God, I can live without sugar. And I can live because you are there. And sometimes a little partial fast can work. And maybe at times like Lent, people traditionally think, okay, what about giving up chocolate? Or what about kind of, and thinking, is there something? Which isn't just about being disciplined. I can give up chocolate. I can give up chocolate. No, I can't. but there is something about it's a means of God's. Fasting is not about being disciplined. It's about receiving the grace of God into your life. There is, I suppose, some people say, well, there are also special fasts in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5. It talks about married couples, about when you're married, abstaining from sexual relations for a period to devote yourself to prayer. And maybe there are other kinds of fasting. And so people will say to me, oh, Tim, I don't fast food, but I'm going to fast social media for a month. I'll say, well, that's great. I'm going to fast watching kind of EastEnders or kind of I'm not going to watch a Netflix box set all month. And in some ways, I think, well, fantastic, kind of that might show your self-discipline. But there's something that's really tangible. There's something that really affects your whole body about not eating food that isn't the same as abstaining from social media. Actually, the reality is you cannot live without food. Your physical bodies cannot be sustained without food. Now, it might be news to some of you, but you can live without social media. Oh, yes. Actually, you can live without watching the telly. Kind of. So, in some ways, I think there's something about the physically giving up food and if you've ever tried fasting, the pain, the kind of just the smell of as you're wandering past a kind of a cafe and it smells like a bacon sandwich and that sense of no and the cravings and your body getting kind of grumpy and low blood sugar level and it kind of takes away your human coping mechanisms and you kind of find out who you really like. And there's something about fasting food that reminds me that this body is fragile. This body is, and actually, I can't live by bread alone. That was a little quote, wasn't it? Jesus in the wilderness. Man shall not live by bread alone. And in Deuteronomy it goes on to say, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. There's something about when I realize that just missing lunch, the physicality of that, kind of, I'm struggling to cope. And yet missing a time with God, missing a time enjoying his forgiveness and his love, actually, well, I can get by a few days without that. And you think, well, no, you can't. and fasting reminds you that in a way that giving up television or social media, it's not got the same sensory kind of feeling that this is to do with the core of what life is about. Finding God's grace, finding his hope, finding his mercy, finding his forgiveness. As I give up food, it's like this big kind of tense physical prayer that I'm putting myself through. And it reminds me my dependency is not on my breakfast, my lunch and my tea. I'm dependent on God, his presence, his words. And so as I fast, it's like I'm opening up that pipeway from the reservoir to say, and God, now I need you. Now I'm longing for you. Now there's a hunger this body feels, but that's only a little pale reflection of a hunger that my spirit feels for you. And fasting is a prayer. Fasting is an action. Fasting is saying that in the unpleasantness of what I'm going through, it's reminding me there is grace that's available at hand. Just the last couple of things before I pray, and this was the bit that Simon read out, and I just think it's a fascinating thing around Jesus' teaching on fasting, and why Simon asked me to talk about fasting, but on the slide at the start I put the discipline of fasting and feasting, because I think there's something about that fasting and feasting go together. So Jesus, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. So it is religious practice. It's not and they said, well, why don't your followers, Jesus, why don't they fast? Why don't Christians fast? Because other religions do. So how is it that John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees are fasting, but yours are not? And Jesus answered, how can the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? They cannot. So long as they have him with them. But the time will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and on that day they will fast. What Jesus is saying is, when the presence of Jesus is around, when the grace of God is very obvious, we just enjoy it. Actually, it's time for feasting. When there's times in our lives where we wake up in the morning, our first thought is, I'm a child of the living God, loved by him, known by him. When there's times where you're witnessing to your friends and they're prepared to listen to you, when the presence of the bridegroom, Jesus, is around, actually it's a time to celebrate, it's a time for feasting. But when there's times when you're feeling a bit spiritually dry, when there's times where you wonder whether God truly does love you, when there's times where it feels like God is absent, in those times, Jesus is suggesting here, actually, those are times where fasting might be appropriate. Those are times where, when the bridegroom is there, it's times of feasting. When the bridegroom is not there, it's a time for fasting. And what changes fasting into feasting? Now, show my slight northern roots. E does. E. E changes fasting to feasting. Jesus, the presence of Jesus, changes fasting to feasting. The means of grace. As we fast, we say, there's a hunger in my life that's for Jesus. There's a hunger in my life for your presence, Jesus. And at the moment, kind of, for whatever reason, I'm not experiencing that. It feels like you're distant. And Jesus has promised never to leave us, never to abandon us. So kind of, who's moved? And the reality is probably I've moved. And fasting helps me to reorientate in the busyness and the clamour of all the other voices. It helps me to reorientate. And fasting is supposed to lead to encountering the presence of Jesus, which leads to feasting. And so fasting is something that, I suppose it reminds us about a hunger for God. At times life tends to live us, and things are so busy and so full that we miss the truth that life was created to know God, to find him, to encounter him. There's the resources, the reservoir of heaven that Jesus' death on the cross has won for us. And we can just go through our life with our own little anxieties and our own little worries and our own little frets and our own little kind of materialistic kind of being absorbed with stuff. And we need to realize that actually there is a hunger in the human heart. There's a hunger in the human heart for God. And do we feed that spiritual hunger? And sometimes experiencing physical hunger reminds us there is a spiritual hunger. There's a spiritual hunger. There's a hunger for his life, for his hope, for his truth. And I think fasting really helps us to do that. It helps us to remind. It's the actual sense of low blood sugar, bad breath, all the other stuff that kind of it does to you. Actually, but there is a hunger. There's a hunger for you. It's a means to remind myself that there's God's grace available and to be able to receive it into my life. Just the last thing I wanted to say is, in that little kind of bit on the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus talks about spiritual disciplines, and I know that you've done all kinds of spiritual disciplines in your little mini-series, for Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, he just talks about three spiritual disciplines. One is when you give. When you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues, but give secretly, when your Father who sees what you do in secret will reward you. The second thing is about praying. When you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. It goes on to talk about prayer. Then your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. And, of course, the fasting one. When you fast, don't look somber as the hypocrites do. And then your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. And I think it's interesting. giving, praying, fasting. When do you do those things? Because it can sometimes feel that fasting kind of is like a special thing you bring out. If there's a real problem, if there's a real need, if someone's really sick, if you've got to make a career choice, oh, now's the time when I'll pray and fast. And maybe smacks just a little bit of behind the back kind of tactics. But for giving and praying and fasting, the reality is actually there may be a crisis where we give. There's an earthquake or a tsunami somewhere, and we feel, actually, here's a crisis, we will give. Actually, there may be a time when there's a crisis and we want to pray. Maybe we call a special prayer meeting because there's some particular things that we want to pray for. So I'm not saying that we don't fast in times of crisis. But the reality is that, I don't know how you give. I tithe monthly. So there's a little kind of regularly, there's some money that goes out from my account, standing order, to the church. Actually, I pray regularly. We have an early morning prayer meeting every Tuesday, 7:15 to 8:15. I love that regular sense of praying together with others. And if Jesus says about giving, about praying and fasting, how regularly do you fast? Is it just crisis fasting, week of prayer and fasting, or should it be if you give regularly, if you pray regularly, should you fast regularly? And I suppose I'm someone who loves Jesus. I love Jesus, and I want to live my life as much as I can according to what he says, and to become like him. And if Jesus says that I should give and pray and fast, and the first two are regular things, then maybe I should be regularly fasting. Not because there's a crisis, but because it's a means of grace. It's a means by which to encounter God. And so, again, personally, first Monday of the month is always a fast day. And I'll not eat, and it will be, it's not because there's a crisis, but just because Jesus says it. He's wise, he's clever, he knows what the deal is. And so this first Monday was this Monday, I went without food. If you say to me, Tim, what amazing things happened because you fasted? I don't know, but it would just remind me once again. Those hunger pangs as our team time, kind of the cakes were passed round. And I said, no, thank you. Actually, there was just something, I thought, because I'm hungry for God. And that's what I just wanted to leave you with, is there something about your hunger for God? Prayer, giving, praying, fasting, each time it says, whatever you do in secret, the Father will reward you. I'm not quite sure if there's a nectar card for heavenly points, but I mean, there is something about the reward that what we do in secret, giving, praying, fasting, it like opens that big pipework from the reservoir into our life. And actually, what we do in secret, the Father sees, and there's a reward to it. It's not that we're going to get a bigger house when we get to heaven. Actually, it's a reward here and now. There's a reward that we know God's kindness, we know his love, we know his hope, we know light and darkness. So, as I pray, my prayer is that you'd be hungry for God, hungry for his grace, hungry for his kindness, hungry for his forgiveness, hungry for his presence that changes your life and hopefully through you changes the lives of those around about you. And there's so much, there's a reservoir of heaven that's waiting there for you, hidden away in the mountains of heaven, but there's means by which you can encounter and receive that grace. And maybe this week, for no other reason than Jesus says it, maybe you want to give up a meal. Give up food for a day and just say, God, as this body is hungry, it's reminded me that my spirit's hungry, hungry for you. Let's pray. God, thank you so much that your love and kindness, forgiveness, healing, deliverance, hope is free, that we can't earn it, but we can position ourselves to receive it. Thank you for this series where we've been looking at different ways to be able to receive your grace and receive your kindness in our lives. And this tricky subject of fasting, Lord, I pray for each of us we would consider how maybe at some point to fast and to follow your words, Jesus, and just to see the impact it has on our lives as a means to receive your grace. In Jesus' name, amen.